Good morning, and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Albert Morales, your host and managing partner of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is John Sindelar, Deputy Associate Administrator for the Office of Government-Wide Policy and the General Services Administration. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation, also from IBM, is Peter Sobich. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Al.
John, can you tell us about the history and mission of the General Services Administration, or GSA?
Yes. GSA was founded in 1949 as a result of the Federal Property and Administrative Services Act, essentially to provide an efficient and economical system for procurement and supply of personal and real property, transportation, federal buildings, the design and build of federal buildings and courthouses, and essentially created GSA as in a unique position. I like to characterize GSA as the business arm of government. We're also what I would call the market maker. So basically our role is to provide other agencies a better, faster, cheaper way of acquiring the things they need to do their mission.
John, can you tell us specifically about the Office of Government-Wide Policy, or OGP?
Well, the Office of Government-Wide Policy was created in December of 1995. And there had been a number of studies that were produced over the previous years, I think going all the way back to the late 80s, put out by NAPA, by the Office of Management and Budget, by GAO, and some other independent studies that said there really needed to be in the General Services Administration more emphasis on policy in addition to the services and the service delivery that the operations provided, and to have that policy-making role, policy and regulatory-making role, independent of providing those services and service delivery so there's no perceived conflict of interest. And so we were created in 95 to do just that. If you take a look at Office of Government-Wide Policy and the rest of the General Services Administration, our policy-making role and regulatory-making role basically is a reflection of how the rest of GSA is set up. For example, Public Building Service is responsible for the design and build of federal buildings, courthouses, lease space, and so forth. We have a real property regulation and regulatory role for the government, and that includes the lease space and the real property areas that PBS is included in, Public Building Service, excuse me, let's try to stay away from acronyms, as well as other real property agencies like the Army Corps of Engineers and so forth. So we basically have the same policymaking role as GSA has, business responsibilities, but we also reach out past into what other agencies are doing as it relates to the policies that they're subject to.
Now, does your office also support the Department of Defense?
Yes. We work with the Department of Defense. Any policymaking that OGP is involved in is a very collaborative approach. And that means pulling in the stakeholders. And obviously, Department of Defense is a big stakeholder and big contributor to policies that are made. Doesn't always work out that DOD is part of that and as an end result, but they certainly consulted and collaborated with and at times very much part of it.
John, what's your specific role and responsibilities as Deputy Associate Administrator of GSA?
Well, I wear many hats, but one particular hat as it relates to the Office of Government-Wide Policy is, I would say, what we'd call the Chief Operating Officer, responsible for all the budgetary activity that we do, personnel work, all the things that a Chief Operating Officer does. But I also wear another hat. GSA, or OGP, is Office of Government-Wide Policy, is a bridge between what the Office of Management Budget does at a higher level in terms of their policy making and what the agencies adopt. There's a need to interpret that policy and make it real. And some of my work in the e-government area, particularly lines of business of late, is involved daily in addressing the issues that we're addressing now.
John, you also serve as executive sponsor of the Lines of Business Initiative. Can you describe to us your role as executive sponsor?
Yes. one of the things that the lines of business has set out to do, the process that we've established, let me put it that way, is to bring together, again, the stakeholders across the various agencies. And in the lines of business, if you look at the ones that we're focusing on today, like financial management and human resources, it touches every agency. So it's important to have the agencies represented on a task force. And that task force needs to understand what it's about to do, what its vision, what its goals and objectives are, what the deliverables are, and do it within a very compressed time frame. And the past 2 years, that has meant starting in early March and essentially finishing the business case in July. And there is a lot of work in between. So what I do essentially is try to build an effective task force to get those deliverables accomplished, to facilitate the entire effort, to help make sure that we have the right linkage between the senior management of government as well as those folks that are involved on the day-to-day work of the task force.
Now, you've got a long bio in terms of government service. Can you tell us a little bit about your previous positions before becoming Deputy Associate Administrator at GSA?
Well, actually, I became Deputy Associate Administrator of Office of Government-Wide Policy at GSA in 2000, but 5 years before that, I was the Chief of Staff and effectively functioned as the Deputy Associate Administrator. So it's about 10 years with the Office of Government-Wide Policy in roughly the same role. Before that, I was very much involved with the National Performance Review. And GSA was a major player in the National Performance Review in many different ways. So I helped lead that effort for the agency, which basically got me the type of collaboration approach and dynamics related to what the National Performance Review is all about. Before that, I was in competitive sourcing. I ran GSA's outsourcing A76 program. Competitive sourcing is what it's called these days. I did that for 3.5 years, and before that, I cut my teeth in budget and financial management for about 10 years, both with Treasury and then later with GSA.
John, you've been with GSA for quite a long time, and you've played an important role in the transformation at GSA. Can you tell us about some of the changes and transformation at work at GSA?
Well, I've seen GSA go from when I came on from Treasury to GSA in 1980 from 39,000 folks down to about between 14 and 15,000 today. And I've seen our business grow at the same time. What I can say how GSA has changed, first off, in one very big way, is we became a non-mandatory source of supply for agencies. When we were first created, we were a mandatory source. And we set up a schedules program that had to be used. So what the fact that we've had to become competitive as a non-mandatory source has driven GSA to become a lot more efficient, a lot more effective in what they do, willing to change, and to become customer-centric in order to continue to drive the business that we've been able to do. And I would say a much more productive organization.
Can you describe for the listeners what non-mandatory versus mandatory source means?
Yeah, I'm sorry. When GSA was first created, and I talked about the functionality like supplies, like fleet, where we have a motor vehicle pool that would have to be used, or leasing is a good example. Agencies were required to use GSA as their source, which in effect created a monopoly, a public monopoly. That GSA didn't necessarily have to be efficient and effective in what they did because they were, of course, the source that would provide those services or supplies. That has all changed.
The reduction from 39,000 to 14,000 is a very dramatic shift in the number of personnel. Do you think that GSA has managed that transition well over the past, I guess, 20 years?
Looking back, I would say yes. Part of that was we under our initial legislative authority was for records management, and we had the National Archives underneath of us. So that was a sizable chunk of the 39,000 that then became an independent agency. If memory serves me correct, that was probably between 4,000 and 6,000 of it. But as we became more efficient, technology improved. methods of supply changed. Information technology became going from legacy system development to computers, microcomputers, to the internet and so forth. GSA had to become more efficient or effective because, in essence, GSA is the middleman. They are a market maker. And if the market maker is not as efficient and as effective as possible, then they will no longer exist. So GSA has had to change over time. And we've had our hiccups along the way, as every agency has. And in some cases, we've had to be forced to change in some ways. But by and large, I think we've done a good job.
What is the Quicksilver Task Force and how did it impact e-government? We will ask GSA Deputy Associate Administrator John Sindelar to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.